You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
I'm Calvin, and you're listening to Leading Questions with Calvin Moore. This show is an experiment in civility, gathering people who disagree to sit down face to face and having them discuss their disagreements. Do we ever arrive at consensus? Sometimes. What's most important is we've got the conversation started.
Well, well, well. Welcome to Leading Questions without Kelvin Moore.
Without Kelvin Moore, who's somewhere on the East Coast right now.
I am one of two regular co-hosts, Kent Strath, and I'm here with the other one, Steve Phelps. How are you, Steve?
I'm good, Kent. How are you doing today?
Great. Where is Kelvin?
Kelvin, well, he's in Virginia, right? Or is he on his way back now?
Well,
he might be on his way back. He's probably got to work in the morning, right? Is he back by now?
He left
Where's he at?
Friday. Isn't that a long
it's
way
It's a
to
long
go?
Trip. To, but he just
For
started a new job. Is he getting taking the week off?
Maybe.
That's a long.
Off.
Do you do that the second week?
I don't know.
Let's get into that a little bit more.
We're here. It's a Sunday night in, what's the date? I guess it's now officially the later part of October. It's getting darker earlier. We're about 2 weeks from it getting dark at 5:30.
Ken's about to drink himself into a stupor here because he's depressed.
Super
he sounds really down right now.
Anyway, so this week we are here to talk about entrepreneurship, and we have a gigantic panel of one.
But we're only going to go one of them at a time, and
right.
If he goes over, we'll have to postpone everyone else until the next time.
There may be a part B of the show.
We'll start with one guest, and then we'll move on after that when he's completely done talking.
So I will come clean because of the way I printed this out. By the way, I did not pass out the questions. Do you have the questions?
Well, if you've got them.
There you go. Well, now
wow.
I don't have one.
You know what?
Thank you.
Oh, for all the rest you know, of the guests. Gotcha.
You know, by the way, this is now the most professional you've ever been. You've printed off copies of the questions. You've handed them out. Relatively short order, close to the beginning of the show. I mean, it's pretty good.
I felt a responsibility.
Yeah, because usually you don't even read the questions first.
No.
And here you've printed them off.
No, I don't read the questions first, and then I read them on my phone, which because of the settings, frequently goes dark, and it's time to read a question, and
well,
I have to fire it up and enter my password.
You are...
Anyway, so that being said,
This is A-plus work today.
I printed
well done.
Off the... I printed off the questions, but I know the first name of our guest, but I know nothing else about him, so I'm going to let him...
Let's get into that,
...introduce
then.
Himself. Jay... is an entrepreneur. We're here to talk about startup culture and entrepreneurship. And Jay is a startup entrepreneur, which is good because that's the subject.
Right.
And,
if it was something different.
And Jay, I'm going to let you introduce yourself.
Sure. Let's see. Who is Jay? My name is Jay Rayford.
Rayford. Good.
Born.
Moving on. Question one. Okay.
Born and raised Detroiter, expat Detroiter, left for about 4.5 years or so.
Where'd you go?
And so I lived in West Palm Beach, Florida, upstate New York, in Albany.
Home of Mar-a-Lago, by the way.
West Palm. Right.
Yeah.
And then Philadelphia.
Okay.
So I was out that way. So I came back here in 2010.
Was it was it East Philadelphia or West Philadelphia?
So North Philly, actually.
North Philly.
Okay, yeah.
Right. Because I hear that the exodus from West Philadelphia to like the suburban Los Angeles.
Yeah, I've heard they go to California.
Yes, they do.
There's some issues or something. I don't know. I've heard
anyway,
that.
So I guess what's the short version? Because we're going to get into this whole show is going to be the long version of your story. What's the short version of your story? What do you do? Why are you here?
I'm here because I decided to strike it out on my own. I left my career as a electrical designer and came back home and said, look, I'm just balls to the wall. I'm about to make this happen.
Okay.
And that looks differently depending on what time period that was. But the most thing that really kind of like grew was this sushi business that I'm doing.
All right.
It's called Social Sushi. And literally just came out of a desire to connect people using food and kind of grew from there. So
okay. Now, I am at a disadvantage, a double disadvantage here because you are as far as I can tell, a black man who eats sushi. I hate.
Oh, man. With
the, I'm sorry. Okay. I hate sushi, and I'm super white. Good. So if somebody told me they had a startup sushi business, I would assume they were Japanese. Is that not – is sushi so – is it so ubiquitous now that it, does everybody eat sushi?
So
except me. Let me ask.
What is the reason you don't like sushi?
Because I have a mental block. I was told decades ago that it featured raw fish, and everybody I tell, well, it's raw fish. They say, oh no, you don't have to get raw fish.
Just for the record, Kent doesn't eat strawberries or chili.
No.
So I mean, really, it's not saying much. Yeah, but he's got the palate of a 3-year-old. So I mean, just to be fair, just to put that out there,
there's a lot that I don't eat, but. So yeah, I was told that it featured raw fish. I'm not a big fan of cooked fish, and so that put me off sushi essentially forever.
Understandable.
Is there a kind that you say you specialize in?
For the things that we were doing, both the pop-ups and catering stuff, we never actually had anything raw. So we knocked that out, right away, you know what I'm saying? So a lot of people like, you know, you say you didn't like fried fish either or, you know, cooked fish either. But shrimp tempura is easy one to sell people on. Like, yeah, I eat cooked shrimp. Absolutely. But also, you know, of course, vegetable rolls, the kind of crab sticks, and we did some unique flavors where we added, you know, different things, to give it kind of a different spin. So we used some Detroit-based products. So we, for a crunch, we used like Better Made hot chips.
Nice.
And plain chips. And then for a unique kind of eel sauce, we one of our chefs created this Rock and Rye eel sauce. So we reduced the Rock and Rye.
Fago Rock and Rye.
Yeah, Fago Rock and
Rye.
Now
let me ask you a question. Are there sushi purists who don't like doing what you're doing, like adding potato chips, adding Fago, or doing, you know, kind of making it kind of Detroit-ish, you know, Michigan-ish? Is there any blowback you get from traditionalists?
So I haven't really had a strong blowback from it. I think for the most part, folks going in before they try it, they just say, hey, I'm a sushi connoisseur. I lived in California. Like California is like the official. Mm-hmm. Like, you got the official sushi, and everything else is kind
of
like
they hand out a pin, I think.
right.
So you mentioned you were a I don't know for how long, an electrical designer.
Right. I was doing that for close to 10 years.
Really? Okay. Yeah. in 20 seconds. What's an electrical designer? Is that like an electrical engineer?
It depends on what industry you're in. So I was actually working in electric utility space.
Okay.
I started off doing what they call distribution, so how power gets to a house or a commercial building, and then elevated from there to substation design, which is if you ever see these gated off areas
those
with DT signs
blow
behind
up
them,
when your power goes out, right? Substation blew up.
Those are the things that the city challenges me to climb over and touch.
Right. So I was doing that. Okay. Very
you
boring.
You did that for 10 years or so.
I mean the evolution from the design and doing distribution with DTE here to moving to Florida and focusing on the next level.
So I think you touched on this a little bit. So you did that for a little while. What made you want to become an entrepreneur?
I like sushi.
He hates it.
So as a young age, I noticed that I didn't know entrepreneurs. You know, I had people that I looked up to, you know, whether that was through media. At the time, it was a guy named Don Barton in Detroit that ran a cable company.
Oh, yeah, Barton Cable, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And I was just super inspired by his story and, the ability that somebody just kind of started something from nothing. But again, it wasn't around. I didn't have people around me that, had that experience. Mm-hmm. And so it was always intriguing, but it didn't have a direct line to, actually getting started or what that meant. And so I've had multiple ideas over the years, but never actually like fully diving into them until this moment in my life where I was just like, I want to move back home and be a part of what's happening there. Mm-hmm. Again, this is Detroit in 2010. Mm-hmm. Or as they call it, pre-Gilbert.
Yeah.
what it was my family and friends. I'm just like, hey, like, a lot of people are having conversations about Detroit that we aren't having. Mm-hmm. Like, we need to figure out how we get ready for this opportunity that's coming. And they were just like, don't move back. There's nothing happening here. Don't do it. You get it now. Like, mm-hmm. say it, you know.
How long ago was this transition? When did you go full time?
So in 2010. So when I moved back and literally had to move into my mom's basement, you know, and I had turned in my car. I was biking all over the city or using public transportation. I had to just get out there and figure it out.
Okay.
And of course, I had some, I consider myself retired. So I tapped into my 401k. Of course, I got penalized for that. But, I was able to like just full time, just get up every day and just kind of focus on what I wanted to do.
So what did you do for like, did you go without health insurance and go without, you just kind of like no net?
Yeah. Yeah. Literally. Yeah. I didn't have insurance and stuff like that. I was a young guy.
You're invincible. Sure. No, it's all right.
Of course we feel like, we don't need any of that. Like, I'll be all right.
The flesh will be fine.
Right.
Wrap it up.
Just kind of came back and just dove right in. And it took me through a couple of different ideas before I got to the sushi aspect, though. Mm.
Okay. The first thing that happened was I want to do something for myself. And then the idea about sushi came along?
So while I lived out of state, I had an idea that I was working on at the time. It was called Rep Your City. Mm-hmm. And the whole goal of it was to give people a platform to tell others about the good and, what's happening in their city. Like, even if it's challenging things, being able to tell it from a native perspective, mm-hmm. Or people that actually live there. Because, at the time, of course, Detroit kind of had this thing where everybody was talking about it. But, let's give the viewpoint of somebody that actually lives there, mm-hmm. and dealing with it, or hey, we live, there's people that actually live here. Like, it's not a ghost town. We still got 700,000 people that live here. This born out of that was ability, trying to create a platform for anybody, whether it was to represent a tourism based stuff or artistry or entrepreneurship, just a platform for people to be able to tell their story with a city kind of focused.
Now, you mentioned your 401k, mm-hmm. and using that as a startup capital. If you had it to do over again, would you try and get venture capital, or would you suggest to somebody that they strike out on their own?
So I didn't have everything together when I did it. So it wasn't like I cashed out my 401k with a specific plan.
Okay.
I did it just to be able to survive and just like get to, figure out some things. So
now I'm gonna buy
it's a little differently.
Okay,
right, right. It's a little differently. Cause there are definitely some folks that have a story of like, I used my 401k specifically for startup capital. And for me, it was just so I can be able to survive, mm-hmm. At the time. I did have an idea and a plan of some things that I want to do,
okay.
But I didn't have a direct, a product already lined up or anything like that. So I was literally going through the process of working with a coder to help me develop the website and things like that. And, that was a nightmare dealing with that. But, a lot of learned lessons going through that for sure.
So it sounds like you didn't have an actual partner in this, but you had some other people that you were working with that kind of set you up in some different directions that may have not been directly involved with your product, but you had some help from some other people. Is that true?
Well, actually, I did bring that first iteration. I did bring on him on as a CTO, basically, and we tried to. He thought he was like a Zuckerberg, and I was just like, I can't go pitch this in front of and it doesn't work, right?
Yeah.
And I think the bubble at that time was, you can draw something on a napkin and get funding for it. Like, I'm in Detroit, I'm not in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. Like, this doesn't work like that.
Right. How many people? What's the name of your business? Let's throw that plug out there.
So it's called Social Sushi.
SocialSushiDetroit.com
is the website. We're actually pivoting, which I'm hoping we can get kind of to that story too. But
we got all the time in the world, Jay.
Right.
Whatever you want to talk about.
Indeed.
Okay, so Social Sushi, is it more than you? Are there other employees? Do you work with people?
So right now, I have a small team.
Okay.
Right now. Primarily my chefs and stuff like that, they, while we're kind of going through the motions of figuring out space and stuff like that. They have their own jobs and projects that they're working on. And anytime that I'm able to point business in their direction, you know, while we're figuring this stuff out, that's what I do.
Do you still, and I imagine, I mean, you know, things are still growing. I imagine you, do you still cook? Do you roll sushi?
So I roll when I need to.
Okay.
But not that I choose to.
Okay.
So if one of my chefs aren't available, I mean, they've trained me enough, you know, to
be able to do it
as well.
Okay.
Yep. Mm-hmm.
So how many people are in the operation total then?
So it's right now it's two of us on the operations thing. And then as far as, you know, being able to tap into chefs to get the business done, it's about three.
Okay.
Three of those folks.
You know, there's a saying, competition is good for business. That's mm-hmm. why you'll see a corner with three out of the four corners have a gas station
right,
on them
right.
or a Home Depot next door to a Lowe's. You mentioned that you wanted to strike out on your own and you didn't, and you landed on sushi after thinking, you know, trying or thinking about a couple different things.
Mm-hmm.
Was it your goal to create something novel or something that comes with built-in competition, that there would be that it's a sector that's already been proven people want it?
So I think at the time when I started it, it wasn't necessarily to start a restaurant or, you know, a catering business. It didn't start out that way. It started out as a kind of a social venture to bring people together, and sushi was this tool on how we did that. And what the folks told me was that, hey, like, I've been looking for good sushi all over Detroit, and I haven't been able to find it. Your stuff is good. Where are you located? And I heard this like 100 different times. And at that point, it was just like, you know what? Let me put together a business plan to see what we could, you know, if we can kind of fill that niche, you know, that need that we've been hearing about.
Now, there's been a long, I live in Madison Heights. Over the last couple of years, Madison Heights, Hazel Park, right along John R., there's been mm-hmm. this large push for actually Asian cuisine of all kinds. A lot of noodle places specifically. But really, and that's kind of going from there. I think the number one, there's a Korean karaoke bar that opened up by Target at 14
nice.
Mile and John R. It's now been, I think, 2 years running, the top karaoke bar in the southeastern, you know, Michigan, or the Tri-County area. And so
I've got a friend who it's the Opera House friend. I've got a friend who lives in, you know, she's a 30-something millennial who lives in New Center, Detroit. Mm-hmm. And when she was looking for – and we share a birthday. We were born on the same day. And when she was looking for something for us to do on our joint mm-hmm. birthday, she was reaching out to friends in Ann Arbor and wanted to karaoke, and every Google search for karaoke landed on this bar,
nice,
this one Asian Korean karaoke bar. I guess it's, I mean, there's not that many of them.
No,
I guess.
So have you noticed any continued rise in interest, seeing that so many of these kind of Asian cuisine places are popping up? Maybe not so much in the city proper, but, you know, kind of in and around the city.
Yeah, I mean, specifically on the city proper, since we've been doing the pop-ups and catering and stuff like that, we've seen at least Maru has opened up downtown Detroit. And there's
is that on Lafayette?
I'm
trying to picture
Washington.
Is that where it is?
I think it's Washington.
Right.
I'm not sure.
Okay.
But it was like, it's right at the Chrysler building. It's like right on that same block.
I'm thinking of a different place.
Building.
I think the place I was thinking of right by Penobscot, which I guess would be Fort maybe, but it's been a minute since I've been there. But
it's like around, it's not too far from
Penobscot. It's the same place, then,
yeah.
I'm going to ask you a dumb question.
What's that?
This has nothing to do with sushi. It's nothing to do with karaoke.
Mm-hmm.
You just mentioned two streets, Washington and Lafayette, which are in Royal Oak, are a block apart. Are those, do they have any relationship to the streets in Detroit?
No.
No. I just didn't know if they went.
They actually cross. They're they're completely different. I think Washington and Lafayette are somewhat famous people around here or something like that.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
I think
sure.
I've heard of them. You
every
know,
every single. Yeah.
Anyway, but has this helped your business in these sorts of, that it's becoming, you know, something I didn't grow up with sushi. I grew up with pizza and fast food and cheeseburgers, and I didn't grow up with My parents didn't take me out to – I didn't know what sushi was. It was some exotic-sounding thing. I didn't grow up going to restaurants, really. I don't think I went to a restaurant until I was 9 or 10 or 11 years old. So – growing up,
that
I didn't
extreme, but okay,
it, well, we didn't, we never did. We just, yeah, we really didn't go out anywhere. I remember I'd have to go to my grandparents' house to get to McDonald's because they would take me occasionally. Anyway, I'm getting off the subject. But that being said, you know, that's something I didn't think about around here. Sushi, certainly not, or it was something I saw on television.
Right.
And now it's becoming, you know, like we just mentioned before, I think before we got on online here, we talked about 6, 7, 8 places within not quite walking distance from here, let alone in the Detroit area.
Yeah, I can say when I was a kid, I envisioned sushi as this, like, well, if I go to Tokyo.
Yeah. Right. If I was wealthy, that's the other thing too, is if I had money or if
maybe
I was in Tokyo.
There may be a place in New York or like a place.
Right. Have you been able to ride that wave at all? That it's
so.
You know,
so I definitely think so. I think you know, because we were able. And here's the thing that really struck it for me was that every time we had someone try sushi for the first time with us, we had them for. I mean, I feel like we have them for life. Like they're going to always compare everybody else's to our stuff. You know,
that's
what I'm saying?
Your man, Kent.
I'm your man.
You need to try some sushi from this man right here, and I think maybe you're going to find something you might like.
If I could do a very specific order as to what I wanted,
you know what, a California roll, something real nice and simple.
You know what I'm saying? We could do
real nice
veggie,
and simple.
Everything's cooked. No vegetables.
You know what? I think it's better if you just don't tell them what's in it.
Right. Just close your eyes and go for it.
So let me ask you a question. We've talked about some of the specifics in the business and some of the things you used to do. What do you think the skill set is that you bring to the table that's allowed you to have the success you've had and perhaps going to have more success going forward? I mean, if you can pick a couple things, what is it that you bring to the table that allows you to be successful?
I would definitely say vision being one. Just the foresight to, you know, imagine, I guess, something and to see it be able to come alive and, you know, understand what you need to do to make it happen. So definitely vision. I think that this crazy work ethic, I mean, because nothing ever really goes right and, you know, being able to stay on top of it and keep going. So yeah, vision, I would say work ethic and kind of this, I think, maybe even initiative, you know, because it's easy to think about an idea, but to like actually put in the work to execute it, even if you don't have that particular skill set, I think it's
everyone
something.
Has a great idea. Every Thanksgiving, you're sitting around and somebody's got an idea. Like,
yeah,
like, hey, we need this. Every writer has in their head is the best novel in the world.
Absolutely.
Everyone's got the best, you know, they haven't written the screenplay yet, but it's right here. You know, it's
you
in their
know,
head.
You know who the only person, present company excluded, the only person I knew that I can think of who had just like a killer idea who just made it. I went to a family reunion some years ago and was talking to my dad's cousin, Betsy.
Betsy.
And Betsy, Betsy said, have you tried? I'm going to tell you.
Fast forward, this is Betsy DeVos. He's
it's not
billionaire now.
But she is relatively wealthy, but I don't think it's because of what I'm about to say. I'm going to tell you what the name of this product is.
All right.
And we're going to try and keep it together. All right. It's called BB's Muffin Splitter.
Whoa.
Okay.
Does it take the top of the muffin off the?
No, it is a it's like a spring loaded thing. It's a machined. There's no springs, but it's like it's metal under tension, so you can squeeze it.
Okay.
And it's like a fork, but the tines are like half the tines are offset. So if you squeeze them, this fork splits, right? So you stick it into an English muffin, and you squeeze and it just pops the muffin apart. And apparently, she sold thousands of them.
Wow.
I like English muffins. I've never thought of that before. I take a knife and I just cut it like everyone else.
Right.
So
a peasant, apparently.
I have a BB's muffin splitter.
Tell you.
Oh, wow.
And
do you
eat
muffins?
On those rare occasions that I have English muffins at home, then I'll use it. But I don't buy English muffins because.
No.
Of BB's muffin splitter.
No. That's She sat around like Jay, and the two both have in common. Right. You got up and you did something
she had
about
that initiative.
It. Exactly,
she had the vision. She saw it and went for it.
You did.
This one story I'll share. A teacher friend of mine told me about. He said one of his students, one of the guys that was just like lazy, just kind of a butthole. I mean, that's what he said. But he said he stopped coming to class, and one day he saw him. And he's like, hey, what happened? What's going on? He's like, man, I struck it big. I had a great idea and, made it happen. He said, what is it? He said, it's salted napkins.
Napkins. Salt. So your drink doesn't stick to the napkin.
Yes.
Oh, my gosh.
So he said he was sitting at the bar. His cousin is like a lawyer or whatever. Okay. Not a lawyer. He was a patent attorney.
Okay,
still a lawyer.
Specifically patent attorney. And he was just like, really? All right, let's make it happen. And I think they sold it to Solo Cup. I think.
How do you?
That's the story. I'm not sure. I didn't fact check this.
Yeah,
it sounds great though. It's like,
he was like, yeah, he's just a millionaire now.
Salted napkins. Napkins. Do that don't stick to your wow.
So sometimes it's not about initiative, it's not about vision, it's about having an idea and patenting it and selling it off to somebody else to do all the work.
Right. I mean, and I think that goes to something I'm about to ask you. So a lot of people, once they're successful, they like to talk about how they're self-made. They mm-hmm. they did everything on their own. I mean, in your opinion, for people that you've seen as being successful entrepreneurs, for the amount of success that you've seen yourself, obviously you're not on the top of the mountain,
right.
But you're still on the way up the
mm-hmm.
mountain. I mean, there are a lot of people are going to say, you know, my own bootstraps. I did it myself. I'm a self-made. No one helped me. For someone who's in the muck right now, who's doing the work, I mean, would you say that everything that you've gotten so far is something that you've done to yourself? Or like you just said that in that story, it sounds like there's hard work, there's initiative, there's a good idea, but sometimes it's being lucky and
absolutely.
Being in the right place at the right time.
Absolutely.
What's your opinion on that?
So I would say that definitely there's a – let me see how to put that. So I think, for one, there's often no other you. Mm-hmm. So for that, I mean, I think there's this ego is just like, hey, like I did this, right. Whatever. But I mean, there's a lot of moving pieces to starting a business and everything like that, whether it's funding, whether it's actually, having a team of people and being able to, I mean, even if you're the greatest manager in the world, if you don't have the people to manage, you're mm-hmm. still, you're still in that sinking boat. For me, I couldn't be where I am, one, without my customers. Mm-hmm. So I couldn't say that, I got here by myself. Like, no, it's the community of people that support what I'm doing or love the product that I'm doing or that think of me to come for catering or anything like that. Like, I couldn't do that without them. And then, two, I mean, the resources that are out there, the people that want to support and, specifically some of the Detroit resources that are out there. I've taken part of so many different Build Institute, Build Grad, did Tech Town Retail Boot Camp. So there's systems in place to help support. Mm-hmm. And I definitely don't think that I would have gotten here or as far as I did without those support systems.
Right.
Definitely some part of it is definitely like, hey, like because of me, this thing is going, but definitely would never say that I got here by myself for sure.
Right. I mean, yeah, it does seem we're the same people, I think, and take their ideas and drop, if they were born in, Outer Mongolia, they're born in the steppes in Asia or wherever it might be, with the same idea of taking off. You may have been just as smart. You may have had a great idea, but there's so much around you
absolutely.
That supports success
absolutely.
That if you're not in the right spot, you're not in the right time, you're not in the right, atmosphere of some other people who've been successful too. It's really hard to kind of pick that up.
Absolutely.
What would you say is the most rewarding thing that's happened to you as a business owner?
I would say
apart from the money. I mean, I don't know.
The wealth.
Like I said, I think at the end of the day, I kind of alluded to it earlier. Was the when I get someone that's never either had sushi. I mean, we're talking. Young folks, 12, to 15 up to, you know, 40, 50, 60 years old, never had sushi before. And it's like, me to allow them, you know, to this experience. And now it's just like, oh my goodness. And to me, that's opening up their world in a way that they, you know, like, okay, what else have I been keeping myself from all this time, you know? And that's something to me that just like does something for me. So I think that, to me, that's the most like that building that relationship through food has been the most amazing thing.
Okay. So yeah, I think can we take just another couple minutes to talk about that? I think we had talked about a little bit before we even started recording, and I thought it was really interesting is that sushi is just a byproduct, it seems like. Would I be correct in saying that really your interest in community and bringing people together? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Right. So when I moved back, I networked all over the city and just wanted to build relationships with people. It didn't matter if it was an event for the nonprofit sector, or I was among artists and musicians, or other entrepreneurs. Like I participated in these events, built relationships, and figured out how to. What I saw was that everything was so segmented. Like, those folks are over there, these folks over here. What can I do to bring these folks together? And I thought, you know, like, sushi, as old as it is still new to so many people. Mm-hmm. And then the folks that do eat it, it's an excitement about going to eat sushi. Like, it's not just like, oh yeah, we just had pizza today.
I'm excited about the thought of sushi right now.
Right. You know, like, it's a thing. Like, oh, sometimes like, it's like, oh, we're going to get sushi? You should have told me. I should have got my good clothes on. You know, like, it's a whole experience behind it. It really is a whole experience behind it. And it's a social experience. Like, I don't know what the statistics are on how many people go get sushi by themselves. Like, I don't really know what it is, but it's more it. Like a, hey, let's go out and get sushi together. You know what
it's
I mean?
It's like coffee. You do it together.
So it's like a natural.
Now I'm sad. I'm sad at the thought of somebody going for sushi.
Oh, right. All alone.
It's kind of crazy, but innately it's a social food, I think. Mm-hmm. You know, and so that's what I want to kind of tap into.
So it's funny you say that because I was just talking to my wife the other day about eating better, eating healthier, you know, dieting, you know, I don't even know how we talked about the actors who go on these crazy diets and eat kale for 3 months in order to get down in shape or whatever. And I was just thinking, you know what, the biggest thing I would have a problem with about ever going on one of those diets is not about missing out on food I like, but the whole social atmosphere that comes with the food. Like everything, you know, I try to surround food with people as much as often as possible. And I know some people, I know Calvin does this. I know Jennifer Kinney does this. I know a lot of people do these, you know, they get, basically it's kind of an old school dinner party. Right. And it sounds exactly what you're talking about now. And it's with more of a social bent now. Whereas maybe before it was, and the bourgeoisie getting together with their bougie friends and like y'all sitting around the table with, you know, and everyone. But now it's a different. It's kind of like, let's get as many people from different backgrounds, different points of view, get together and eat something and then talk about something in an atmosphere of respect versus something different. So it's really, I think this is
really
something you're onto.
Encapsulated
there.
What our first event looked like. Like there are literally all these different people from these, you know, different networks that I were able to build a relationship with and brought them to one place. And it was no programming or anything like that. It's just saying, hey, we're just coming together, have some sushi. And, you know, we end up doing like some type of like giveaways and stuff like that or whatever to have some kind of fun to it. But at that point in time, we didn't even do the sushi. I had it at a place that had sushi. Mm-hmm. Like it was a Chinese restaurant that's no longer open. It was Wahoo downtown. It was the very first place we did it. So it wasn't even so much that I was about the, like, I have to make the sushi. Yeah. It's going to be delicious. Like, all that kind of stuff.
Food was just a byproduct.
Right.
Okay,
right.
I got you.
And then it kind of morphed into, all right, so people love this stuff. You know, like I said, my uncle has been doing Japanese cuisine pretty much my whole life. So I had some type of, exposure to it through that. And then one of my other partners at the time, her cousin was a sushi chef as well. So he would come in and do the events and stuff like that. We had a sushi rolling class and people went nuts about it. Like, oh my God, it was so great. You know, it was like a couple's thing, you know, like they do it together. And it kind of grew from there, man. And, then we started putting our own spin to different things. Like we had this, our own twist of spicy mayo that people absolutely go crazy over. They're just like, listen, when are you going to bottle this stuff? Like, I need it. And so
I like some wasabi on mine too. So yeah, yeah. If I don't have to bother with that because there's some kick inside the sushi itself, yeah, then I don't need that extra stuff.
And too, like, you know, like I said, for those first time folks that eating sushi for the first time and they have it with the sauce, mm-hmm. and they go somewhere else. And just like, something's missing. Hey, can I try your spicy mayo? Then they try their spicy mayo, and it's like,
you're going to kill people trying to go back to eating old sushi. You're going to do that.
So kind of a flip side of the previous question, what would you say is the what was the hardest part of this process? What's the biggest challenge you've had?
I think the biggest challenge is the part that I'm in right now. Mm-hmm. So I'm actually looking to get an actual location. Yeah. And so I've been, I think, the last project that we were very, very close to actually making happen was on the Illinois 7 Mile.
When you're looking for a location, are you looking for something like public facing that the public can walk into?
Yep. Okay. So we started to look at what a sushi lounge could look like.
Okay.
Like a full service. You know, we'll have some live entertainment sometime. You know, like we can kind of bake into this physical space all the things that we've kind of done over time. So now we got folks coming in. So when we did pop-ups at a place called R Detroit down in Corktown. Okay. Or Southwest Detroit. And what we would see people come in that lived out of town and came to Soul Sushi, like, hey, I love this thing. Like, I'm able to meet new people, eat the sushi that I love, and I'm meeting new people every time that I come here. We had people playing board games together, strangers just playing board games together. One time it was somebody else's birthday and they're sharing cake with everybody in the whole place. And, you know, it's a small, tight, intimate place. So one of the challenges was, how do we figure out how to kind of ingrain some social aspects into a full service restaurant? But also, how do we just get good at just doing sushi? You know, so the full service idea and doing a sushi lounge has been very challenging as far as like, trying to get a space open, dealing with the architects, the contractors, the building owners, and all that kind of stuff. So our last space didn't work out for us. It was on Livernois 7 Mile, and which at this point may have been a blessing because there's a lot of construction that's happening over there right now, and a lot of businesses are getting challenges. I mean, it's going to be beautiful once you get done with it, but right now a lot of businesses are having challenges over there right now.
If you had... You know, looking over the last, you know, decade of your experience in this, if you came across a, you know, 20-year-old, 22-year-old who said, I want to start a business, I have an idea, what advice would you give them?
So I would definitely say to tap into some of these resources to think through business planning and things like that.
Okay.
I would definitely suggest to figure out what is the, without spending a lot of money, what is a way that you can put something out there to see if people actually want what you're trying to build?
So you mentioned business plan. Would you say a business plan is crucial to starting up?
So I would say no. Okay. So there's this a book called The Business Model Canvas, and basically it walks you through quickly, kind of walk you through different steps of planning a business. And so quickly, you're getting down your initial thoughts right away. So who do you think your customer is going to be? How much do you think it's going to cost? Like, what are the, you know, suppliers and things like that and everything. So you go through that first.
Like the PC game Lemonade Stand?
Yeah, I mean, kind of, sort of, right? So, and then the thought process is that now, once you got down your initial thoughts, you go out to the, you go out and talk to people. Mm. Women aged 22 to 32, are they really the customer? Mm-hmm. Are they interested in what you have? You might come back and being like, you know, actually, I found out it was men, 45 to 50. Actually, that's
weird because we're selling lipstick. You know, right. I figured it was going to be women.
So here's the thing with that though, like, you know what I'm saying, you might find out that even though you're selling lipstick, it's actually the men that is buying the lipstick. Yeah. So you're actually, you know, like, so. Right.
It's, well, it's, I think don't preconceived notions are just that.
Exactly.
They're before you know enough
about
what's
going on. So my mindset on business plans, like, I don't want a lot of people to waste a lot of time trying to develop this business plan, which is all assumptions. Right. And you've done nothing to actually test out those assumptions until you waste a lot of money and time and all that.
If
stuff,
I'm not mistaken, I think in the cases of the business plan, I mean, it's more of a, if you're seeking some capital to start, you know, startup capital, you might need
a
business plan.
I mean, because that's what they want to see.
It's all assumptions and dreams, but they want to see write them down.
Right. They want to see your thought process and how you think through it. Like, what about this number? How did you arrive here? So from that standpoint, like, definitely. But I think, you know, as you mentioned, the young person is just like, hey, I got an idea. Mm-hmm. I would encourage not to do a full business plan. I would encourage to do this business model canvas and kind of like play around with some of those things and actually start to maybe even talk to some other business owners and get some kind of like close actuals about some numbers and stuff like that, which is something that I did. I talked to other restaurateurs and got a lot of great feedback.
Piggybacking in that, if you could pick in your experience your biggest mistake, what you would tell somebody, do this. This is something, you know, just don't do this. And then conversely, if you have something that was absolutely your best and greatest idea that you would definitely say, here's what you should do. This is a must. You should. It might be small, might be big, but what would that one thing be that they absolutely should?
Hmm. So the first one was the biggest mistake that I encourage other people not to do this.
Stay away from this.
It was the Captain Crunch suit.
Don't do this.
The biggest mistake.
That you look back on today and you just kind of cringe just a little bit, thinking, you know what, that was a fork in the road where I should have gone the other way.
Gotcha. I would probably say I tried to force a partnership that just wasn't, it just, the pieces didn't fit, but I was trying to force it to fit. Mm-hmm. And it was just, It was just bad because, I mean, my nature, like, you know, I want to win together, right? Mm-hmm. I'm just like, yo, we could do this together. And it was just, at the end of the day, it just didn't work out. So I think that, you know, partnerships when it comes to, like, you know, doing business together, for one, of course, it's never personal. Mm-hmm. But also, like, I mean, you have to kind of step away from your personal feelings about it and be like, hey, does this make sense? Do the pieces really?
Well, it sounds to me like what you're saying is it's like any kind of other relationship where you're dating somebody. You're getting actually more like marriage, really. It's a contract in a sense that you need to know who you're getting in bed with.
Right.
And, you know, you got to be able to, you know, like before you marry somebody, do we have kids? Do we not have kids? Do we, you know, you taking my name
things,
or no? Or what schools are we going to go to? Where are we going to live? Where, you know, what are we going to have separate bank accounts? It sounds to me like it's kind of the same deal.
Absolutely.
You got to have these talks before you ever get into business.
Yeah, absolutely. And, I mean, fortunately, like, we didn't actually, like, get things off the ground before kind of things hit the fan, but which are very lucky. It would have probably been disastrous had things moved forward and, you know, real money got involved.
So what's the opposite? What's the best move you made at any point that you can look back on now and say, hey, when I did this, this really kind of helped turn a corner? Now, it may have not ended up where you wanted to be, but it was something you learned from that was really a point that you can really look back and say, you know what, I made the right decision in this case, and I, you know, that's something you would pass on to somebody else.
I think it's trust in the gut, I think. I'm trying to think of a particular situation.
When you say that, do you mean like don't let someone talk you out of something that you feel deeply?
Right.
Is that kind of just pay attention to your own?
Yeah. Somebody just posted the other day. He said, don't follow, stop trying to get directions from somebody that's never been where you're going. Mm-hmm. And it's so much of that.
Don't ask advice from people you wouldn't care about their own advice type thing. Yeah.
Well, I think a lot of times, like, just because we want to try to soak up as much knowledge as we can, and especially if you respect a person and who they are and what they do. But if they've never been where you're going, you know, they're offering it this, like, hey, you should do this, you should do that. Like, you have to take it with a grain of salt and follow your heart. I mean, you know, even if you bump your head or whatever the case may be. So I think definitely, like, just trusting your gut. Even through relationships, there are some times where folks are just like, I don't know if you actually want to do it. I'm like, listen, my gut says let's move forward with this. Sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't. But I think that at the end of the day, if something were to go wrong, hey, I trust in my gut, and, you know, I'm okay with the fact that if it didn't work out or it did.
Okay, because at the end of the day, I mean, if you fail and you failed because you didn't do something, that's worse than saying, absolutely, I tried and failed versus exactly, I never thought it to actually do it, because then you only have yourself to blame.
Yep, yeah, absolutely.
So for regular listeners of this program who they measure the rhythm of their life by the 2 hours it takes to get through an episode, we're going to bring this one in short, and this is a normal result, or the a predictable result of having one person talking as opposed to like five.
Absolutely.
So we want to thank you for being here.
I appreciate
and,
the time.
Sure. And let's plug it one more time. It's socialsushi.com.
So it's socialsushidetroit.com.
Oh.
and I just wanted to say that we're actually in the midst of a pivot right now.
Okay.
So I'm changing from a full service operation to a more fast casual. I pretty much want to dominate sushi delivery across Metro Detroit. And basically all those experiences that we're talking about that folks are having, like I want to be a part of their memorable experience.
If you
want to
dominate delivery, I mean, are you with Grubhub or Uber Eats? Or
once we get our location and going and stuff like that, we'll definitely be partnering with one or two of them.
Yeah.
Definitely out the gate for sure. But I think at some point we might end up doing our own. Okay. Delivery.
Do you want to plug any kind of social media presence right here right now?
So
any
websites,
or Facebook.
So yeah, socialsushidetroit.com. We'll be announcing the
TikTok,
the pivot. No TikTok yet. Ask my daughter about that one.
All right.
But yeah, on Facebook and Instagram with I think it's Social Sushi Detroit, and then on Instagram it's Social Sushi. And we don't really do Twitter, but it's Social Sushi DET.
Okay.
But and like I said, the name may or may not be changing, so I'll be announcing all of that through the social medias that we already have. And
that's actually just a quick question. Have you found, advertising 30 years ago is different from 20 years ago, different from 10 years ago. What's your best? How do you advertise right now? What's your best? I mean, is it the social media areas? Is it word of mouth? How do you do it?
So I would definitely say when we first started putting events out on Facebook and folks actually being able to see it was so much easier mm-hmm. when we first started, and then as we kind of get a couple years down the line. It was very difficult. So like if folks on my Facebook event page would say, it'll say like 100 people are going.
Mm-hmm.
I can for sure be like 50 people coming.
Okay. So what we need need Andre Drummond to like Social Sushi Detroit, and that'll get you what you need. It's always who you know.
Oh, there for we go. Sure. But I think right now with social media, definitely word of mouth, but I think we're going to have to get back to some of the old school strategies, mm-hmm. Using the United States Postal Service to get some stuff in actual people's mailboxes.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, like
cold faxing.
Yeah. Yeah. just kind of get back to some of it because the algorithms have changed mm-hmm. with social media so much. Definitely with the search engine stuff, definitely getting that on deck. So like you were saying, Googling the Korean, like that
karaoke,
came up every time,
and podcasts, of course.
I think that the SEO definitely matters, but yeah.
All right. So socialsushidetroit.com. Jay, great to have you here. Calvin,
appreciate you.
This is how you bring the show in under an hour. Ready for this? you got anything to wrap up with, Steve?
I appreciate you being here, Jay. This is I think there's a lot of people I think out there with that idea. They're sitting at that bar and looking at that napkin thinking, damn it, my glass keeps sticking to that. But they never do anything about
it.
Right. And I think a lot of times it's not necessarily that they don't have the motivation to do it. But I think they're maybe not brave in that moment because they haven't seen other people successful.
Exactly.
And so they don't want to give too much of themselves that moment for fear of failure. And so I think someone like yourself who's, like you said, you're not to the top of the mountain, but you're on your way up. And I think that's inspiring to people. Like you had when you were younger, you saw success and you mm-hmm. wanted to emulate that success. And I think it's people like yourself who are going to come out and say, I'm not rolling in it right now, but I'm on my way to something that I believe in. And it's not necessarily mansions and limousines, but
absolutely.
There's a lot more that's fulfilling that's a part of it. And so I think stories like yourself are what's important and kind of in passing on whatever knowledge we have,
absolutely.
Failures and successes, because we're all going to learn more from the failures anyway.
Yeah, and I think that there's some value in the mist that because I think we get people like maybe right at the beginning, mm-hmm. and right, like, yeah, I've been there, done yeah. that. I've been successful, but right in the middle, in the meat of it, mm-hmm. and seeing people, people are able to see your journey, where you are, and they see your growth. It just, I mean, they're more bought into their story at that point. So I appreciate the opportunity cool. for cool. sure.
Thank All you, right. Jay.
Thanks for tuning in, so to speak, to Leading Questions Occasionally Without Calvin Moore. He bails roughly once a year, and we welcome the chance to reclaim this hour of our life. There is a tag that Calvin usually reads at the end of the show involving all the places you can hear the show, and mm-hmm. if you want to bring us out to your college campus. I don't have that script.
No, so, we're just going to make it up. So if you'd like to contact us to come out to your business or your school,
right.
or your park near your house with a couple of picnic tables and a long extension cord.
It's bgates@microsoft.com. you write that, and we'll answer forthwith.
We'll come there.
Right. Anyway, that's it. Tune in next week, so to speak. Tune in is not the right nomenclature. But next week we're going to be doing an episode called Girl Boss, looking at women in the startup community. So I imagine... I haven't seen the guest list, but I imagine we will have one.
It'll be Jay.
We'll be talking about the ladies. Yeah,
I know a lot of girl bosses. I can probably swing it.
All right. Well, thanks. All right. Steve, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Thanks for being here.
Appreciate you.
Tune in next week. Bye-bye.